Hello.
This is Darina
and Deanna
with Bledsoe Empower. Welcome back to our podcast, Empower El Mundo. We are your former collegiate athletes, now trained mental health counselors.
Yes, on this podcast, you can expect to hear about all things total wellness. That is going to include physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual connections. So make sure to tune in every single week because we'll be here.
And we're on all social media platforms. So make sure you follow us and subscribe to Empower El Mundo. Let's get into it.
Let's go. Hello.
Hi. Welcome, welcome, welcome back.
You guys, welcome back. Oh, this has been quite a run.
The journey has been beautiful.
With this podcast.
Yes, it has. Especially with the series of Empowered As.
You guys, we have finally completed all five sections of just dissecting the Empowered As Fuck journal. So if you haven't listened to those episodes yet, just run them back after you listen to this one. But so we're glad that you guys, for those of you who have been tuning in, thank you so much for the love that you guys have been showing on our podcast.
Yes.
As well as our YouTube channel.
It's been beautiful. And everything that you guys have been sharing on our social media pages, on Empower El Mundo through Instagram and Facebook, has been very helpful. The feedback is solid. The support is solid.
It's all love and we appreciate it.
Yes, we do.
So If you guys haven't yet purchased your own journal, it's available. We've got a couple remaining, so just click the link in our bio. Or if you're on YouTube, click the link in the description and you can find it there. So without further ado, let's get into today's topic. So listen, we are on like the last leg of February, so it's only right that we honor our ancestors,
yes,
the Black community,
yes,
and dive into what you don't know about mental health within the Black community.
All right. We're here to share and drop some gems. We thought a little Erykah Badu would be nice.
Just to like,
she's a big part of Black community and my mental health.
Yeah.
Oh, my, my, my. I'm feeling fly. My money's gone.
I'm all alone.
Listen, this is the wrong part. This is when you get the audio.
Listen, you guys get it though.
Too much to see. The world keeps burning.
Listen, we improv here.
Oh, what a day.
what a day. All right, you guys. So shout out to Erykah Badu. Anything she does is really top notch.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's hop into this.
Let's do it.
First thing, let's kick it off with is let's get clear about what the differences are between mental health and mental illness. We hear those terms interchangeably when really they mean something different. So mental illness, this is going to be a range of conditions that can be diagnosed. They meet the criteria in order to be diagnosed as depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, any of those different mental illnesses. That's what that is, essentially. So this totally impacts how you think, how you feel, how you behave, and the relationships that you have around you.
Yeah, mental illness can be long-term. So it's something that is treated long-term. Like, let's compare it to a medical condition like COPD or diabetes. This is something that's treated long-term, and this is very similar to mental illnesses. What to expect is ongoing treatment, ongoing support, and consistent care.
Mm-hmm. That's a fact. So that's mental illness. Mental health. Now, this is a state of well-being. So this is kind of like where we're consistently at over time. So people who have like a really high mental health value or they really spend time on it, they tend to realize their potential as an individual. They identify with their purpose or their meaning in life. They tend to be able to cope with like everyday stressors that we experience through life, normal things that just don't go right. We can deal with that and we're pretty resilient in that sense. We're able to be productive in terms of contributing to society as well. So those are the biggest differences. Mental illnesses tend to meet the criteria to be diagnosed, and mental health is your mental state of well-being.
That was beautifully said.
Thank you. I did prepare for this podcast.
You did very well. So this is important to know, because there's quite a bit of us in the Black community walking around with mental illnesses that are untreated or even misdiagnosed. And so I did some research too.
Let's hear it, please.
So a lot of the national resources, like the National Association of Mental Illness, or NAMI, shows that 1 in 3 Black Americans are suffering from a mental illness and they're untreated with it. And there's a lot more information in terms of the reasons why it goes untreated, which we are going to get into. But I want to make sure we're following the outline.
Well, let me ask this. Why, or is there a difference between mental illnesses or treating mental illnesses within any population in comparison to specifically the Black community?
Are you asking if there is a different form or approach when working with a person of color or a Black person?
Yeah.
Should
there be a different approach to it, or is it just kind of like one size fits all? Mental illness is mental illness, whether you're Black, white, Asian, Native American. Mm-hmm. Is it just a one size fits all, or should there be a different approach when specifically working with an individual who is Black or person who identifies of color?
That is
a person of color.
That's like the $1 million question in the industry, and there's a lot of controversy over it, because we have a form of treatment or approach that's evidence-based, which means a bunch of nerds like me or psychologists got together and did a bunch of studies on different groups of people based on age, background, gender, and they found that this form of treatment, like cognitive behavioral therapy, was effective in different groups over different lifespans. And the issue is, well, if I am a person of color, or if I'm Asian American, if I am from this background, does that form of treatment change? And it's kind of a yes, no answer. No, the approach in terms of the scientific approach is not going to change, but it's absolutely going to be tailored based off of your beliefs, your practices, your traditions. And so yes, no, right? It depends. I believe that even though you're using a certain form of treatment, you do need to acknowledge a person's preference. And you need to acknowledge that their upbringing, their background, their traditions, their practices are going to contribute to communication when doing counseling or coaching or just working with them. And it's going to contribute to trust and rapport, right?
I would say that's 100% true, because just my own personal experience with who I've been able to work with during this pandemic is I've seen an increase of individuals who are specifically seeking Black therapists.
Big time. Big time.
And I remember, like, when that was one of the first things that one of my clients had mentioned during a consultation, it was like, I found you because I was speaking with another Black therapist and I was looking to see who she would refer. And so she referred us. And I said, okay, why was that something important to you to have? And she said, because it means that I don't have to explain the little things that I would have to explain to somebody who is not a person of color. And that means that I feel a little bit safer coming into this session. Even if I don't know you yet, I know that you're a Black person. So you've got some similarities, some similar experiences that you've had that you can relate to. And I don't have to explain to you why I feel a certain way.
What's interesting to me is that it was said to you as the little things. That's how it was labeled. And when you explain it further, my experiences, my upbringing, my beliefs, those aren't little things. But because there's such lack of information, there's so much provider bias, right? So I'm pointing at myself because I'm a provider, you're a provider. We're healthcare professionals and they're called providers. But there are provider biases even in the field that make it challenging to have a client be able to express themselves and the provider not understand those little things, which are big.
Well, I think that that's where trust happens, is in those small moments of feeling safe and not feeling like I'm being questioned.
Yeah.
You know,
what, a,
What a good topic.
It's a really great topic. So, okay, let's get into this next segment. This is going to be our myths versus facts segment. So we want to dismantle certain myths that really just run wild within the Black community and provide facts as to why those are not true, why those are unhealthy beliefs to really obtain, in hopes to just like break those down and add a bit of value and truth to approaching mental health as Black people. Okay, so first one. Okay, so this one I was able to find on the NAMI website, and it's so common. So a lot of people think that anybody who is SMI, seriously mentally ill or severely mentally ill, is violent and dangerous.
Yeah.
And that is such a myth. It is not true. The reality is, the statistic is for SMI individuals, in terms of them committing crimes that are dangerous or violent, it's 5%. And all of the other crimes that are committed during the in the USA is from everybody else. You know what I mean? So it's like the number is not that large. Anybody who's committing a hateful crime, they have a lot of hate within their body. And hate is not a mental illness.
Not at all. It's really ugly. It ain't cute on you. And the other part about it is that 5%, right? The 5% that we're seeing committing crimes or engaging in criminal activity. My question would be, how many of them are being treated? Right? Because it's such a low number of, like I said, 1 in 3 Black Americans actually seek out support. And even within that number, I found a statistic on NAMI that said about 16% are actually receiving the correct and competent form of treatment, which is pretty scary. It's pretty scary when you look at that. What that means is not only did I seek out help as a Black American, but when I got the help, it was either misdiagnosed, I was mistreated, or I worked with a provider that really didn't match me or have enough knowledge in their scope of practice to treat me appropriately and effectively, which means I'm not going to go back to treatment. Right, I'm going to lose my trust in being able to seek out help because the first time I did it, it wasn't the right form.
And you know what it even makes me think about is what percentage of those of that 5% is labeled as like a violent crime when in reality somebody is having a mental break, mm-hmm. A mental illness breakdown, and they're not being appropriately treated. For example, I know that we have all seen on social media a police officer being called out to somebody who is Black and they're having a mental breakdown. And instead of being nurtured and cared for appropriately to just bring down all of the tension in that type of interaction, they are being like drop kicked to the ground, arrested, shot at, killed. And that's not really the treatment that they need.
It's so true. Verbal de-escalation is something that is actually being mandated as a form of training for officers more in the state of Arizona, which, if anything, is going to promote the well-being of individuals that are having a mental health crisis, a mental illness break, a psychotic break, and being able to address it in a safe manner and getting them connected to the right services. And that's often the biggest break is, you know, maybe this individual entered through the legal system, but now they're not being provided the services because they've been labeled as a criminal versus somebody who's suffering from mental health. And so what a great first myth buster that we just cracked. Way to go.
Solid. Okay, so this one I think is pretty big, especially within the Black community, is all you got to do is pray it away. Pray it away. Ask God to fix it, mm-hmm. and he will. Mm-hmm. Ask God to stop your anxiety symptoms, mm-hmm. your depression,
mm-hmm.
that's trauma. Just tell God that you're having those thoughts and he'll take them away.
The feelings that you have for somebody of the same sexuality.
To pray the gay away. Whoa, that one takes us back decades, centuries, yeah. of false thinking.
Honestly. So the myth is just praying it away is enough. And the reality of it is it can be for some, But that doesn't mean that's the only option. There are other options too. So you can work with a spiritual leader. You can work with your faith-based community. You can also work with a therapist. You can work with a coach. You can work with a doctor. You can work with so many other people. You can work at a support group. You can go to group counseling. There's so many things, so many layers to getting support. But one thing we will tell you is that if you are suffering from a mental illness, you will need more support. And that's not a bad thing. If anything, that's going to be a huge stress reliever for you.
And what I think is, you know, kind of going back to our podcast episode about the different support systems, is you can have multiple supports. You can have your spiritual needs met in church, through God, through whatever spiritual connection you have. But that doesn't mean that that's also going to meet the need that you have to take care of your mental illnesses or whatever symptoms you're having that's causing you to not function as well daily. Mm-hmm. We got to go to somebody who's trained to do that. If we can't take care of it ourselves, we have to seek somebody who's professionally capable and competent to help us out.
The risk is that it's going to be an ongoing issue, right? And that's what we're trying to talk to you guys about, are the solutions. Praying is a solution. Going to church is a solution. Working with a therapist is a solution. Working with a coach is a solution. So there's a lot of opportunities out there in addition to using your higher power.
Yeah. And, you know, something that I thought was really powerful and I learned during my beginning stages of being a therapist is your higher power can be anything. It could be God. It can be love. It can be the universe. Like, it can literally be anything.
It can be nothing.
It can be nothing.
It can be anything. It's all about what you believe. Right. And especially in therapy, we always go back to the belief systems. Right. What is it at the core that drives you, that makes you move, that motivates you? And it goes back to your belief system. So if you're coming from a belief system where you only use your religiousness or you're only using your spirituality, we're trying to let you guys know that there's so many other opportunities, too. You just got to give it a chance.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Right.
It's distorted thinking.
Honestly.
Okay, so that's myth number two. All right, our third and final myth that we need Drina to bust is someone who is a professional is culturally competent to help me.
False.
That was a good buzzer.
Thank you. So your provider is culturally competent. Not always true. Okay.
Yes.
And when we're talking about providers, again, we're talking about therapists, we're talking about doctors, we're talking about nurses, dentists, etc. Right? Any healthcare professional you're working with, there is the chance that they may not be as culturally competent in comparison to somebody else that might match you on either a gender level, maybe a cultural level, maybe an ethnic their background. And so keeping in mind that when you are seeking out support, if somebody who is culturally competent or aware or have some similarities to your culture is important to you and necessary in your healing experience, then ask those tough questions when you see your provider. And I'm just saying it because it's happened to me. I've been in situations where I worked with this family who they were Muslims. And I remember they asked me if I've ever worked with a family who practiced Muslim or Islam. And I said, you know, I have some familiarity in it, but I can't sit here and tell you that I've worked with more than 10 families that relate to your background. And it turned into, well, I need to go speak with my husband about it. And we were talking about this earlier in terms of my experience with this family, because I worked with their son, and his mother was the only one that was able to come to the appointments. His father refused to come to the appointments because I'm a female provider. And for him, it was inappropriate to work with a female directly. So all of his messages, all his concerns about his son went through his wife, who I worked with predominantly. And that was something, again, to the question of, do you change up your approach based off of one's culture? Yes, you do, right? you meet their needs, especially if they're telling you specifically what they need. That doesn't have to do with your treatment approach. You can still provide an evidence-based approach, an effective and efficient approach, in addition to being culturally competent and sound and sensitive.
And I think something to add to that is to know that your therapist or your provider, doctor, nurse, whatever, is a human being too. And so they may have their own biases based off of their own life experiences that don't meet the need that they would be able to provide you.
Absolutely.
So I think it's totally fair to interview your therapist or your doctor, whoever the professional provider is that you're working with at the time. Interview them just like they're interviewing you, because not everybody is going to be competent to meet the need that you have.
So let's just kind of put it into perspective. When we're talking about healthcare and history, there's a lot of disparity in people of color being a part of research studies to show the effectiveness of certain treatment approaches, right? And so there is an assumption that this may be effective for you because it was effective for this group of people that we did the experiments on or we did the treatment on. But those groups of people were typically Caucasian or non-people of color.
And male.
And male, in addition to that, right? So that's why you guys are hearing this message today, right? The things that you don't know about mental health in the Black community. There is still quite a bit of research that's unknown, but there's so much more that's coming to light, right?
And people are starting to talk more about mental health and mental illnesses, different types of symptoms that we're experiencing. So it's totally becoming less taboo. And it's also really valuable to know that a lot of the research that has been done historically is based off of not the people of color. You know what I mean? So there's still a lot of growth in finding the best approaches, interventions that do work for Black people and the Black community.
And a fun little side note is your provider is, well, I can only speak about counselors in Arizona. We are mandated to do trainings until our license expires. And my specific license, or ours, expires every 2 years, which means every 2 years we have to update our trainings. And there are three mandated trainings in Arizona that you have to complete. And one of those is cultural competency. That's how important it is to be familiar with the nuances in working with certain populations, in working with certain types of cultures. You have to take the initiative as a professional to increase your knowledge and your awareness so that when you're working with a certain type of individual, you have some idea of how to treat them. And if you don't know, ask. Ask. I can't tell you how many times I've been in situations like, just ask the client.
Before we get past this segment, I want you to talk a little bit about something that you said earlier. So there are different interventions that were used back in the day that no longer are valid because they're just unethical.
Yeah.
And there's one specific one that I want Dorina to talk about because it's going to be offered here in the state of Arizona. So it's no longer going to be banned.
We don't know yet.
Oh, it's that's okay. So it's in conversation that it may no longer be banned. But basically what it is, it goes to the quote of what we, not necessarily the quote, but of the belief that you can just pray the gay away. And it's conversion therapy.
Boo.
Boo.
Boo. It doesn't work. Boo.
It's not a mental illness.
No, it's not.
Who you are sexually and emotionally attracted to is not a mental illness. It has nothing to do with your mental health.
At all. And it's unfortunate that people still are pushing for this form of therapy to be approved in Arizona. And it's on a deeper level, right? It's not to say that conversion therapy isn't being offered, because chances are it is. It's just not being billed through insurance, right?
And that's a big thing.
And that's the biggest thing. Now we're seeing people trying to push it to become approved by the Board of Arizona, right? The Behavioral Health Board of Arizona, as a ethical form of treatment. And I'll tell you one thing, people are shouting against it. A lot of providers in the community are shouting against it because it's just archaic. It's barbaric. It is unethical. It's ineffective. There's no science that supports it.
And that makes me really nervous for like the younger generation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we all have seen that individuals as young as 5 years old have started to identify to either as transgender, or they identify as gay or lesbian. So they, or non-binary, any of those different titles, mm-hmm. I would say that. So it, under the age of 18, your parents are in control of all of that. So if you have a set of parents that are not as supportive with your sexuality or how you identify sexually, then there's going to be a big issue with the conversion therapy. Absolutely. So just something to be aware of, and just stay up to date on what's popping really in the mental health field in your state.
Talk to a professional. So another big part of mental health in the Black community is a study showed that 61% of Black Americans found that mental illnesses or mental health issues were a sign of personal weaknesses.
It's so whack.
It's whack. We're all people. We all struggle. We all have our moments. And some of our moments are longer than others. Some of our moments are long-term conditions, right? And so we got to break this belief. We got to break this barrier. We got to turn the stigma into something that is functional, right? And one way of doing so is recognizing that maybe you are being biased. Maybe you're stopping yourself from reaching out to getting support. And all we're saying is just have a conversation. What's the worst that could happen?
It can go a long way.
It could.
Okay, so let's move on to the next section or segment. Okay, so we want to talk about what mental illnesses or disorders are most prevalent within the Black community.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one that I want to mention is substance use or substance abuse. So this is something that, like, we can go back decades, back to the crack community or the crack era. Let me say that. The crack
era.
Is that
a biggie? Is that a biggie lyric you said? The 10 crack commandments. One.
Yes. God, I love that song.
Yeah, great song. Anywho.
Shout out to my dad. He put me on game. But if we go back to the crack era, there was crack that was dropped in the poverty communities, which had a lot more Black people populating that. So it was already, it was like placed in our hands. So what happens when we're addicted to different substances over really not that long of a time, we are going to start to develop different disorders. Mm-hmm. We're going to start to experience co-occurring disorders. So that's two disorders at once. Depression, anxiety, PTSD, mm-hmm.
Even medical issues.
Yeah. Bipolar, mood disorder. So just know that anybody who's experiencing or dealing with a substance abuse disorder, it's not just that. There's always going to be something that is co-occurring with it.
And if you're the loved one of somebody who's suffering from an addiction and you're asking yourself, what else can I do to help them? Best thing that you can do is get a professional involved, right? And I say this to my clients all the time, even when their loved one is suicidal, even when their loved one is psychotic, even when their loved one is not medicated, right? And they're unstable. When they ask me, what else can I do? If you have to ask yourself that question, it's time to get a professional involved, an interventionist involved, because at this point, you have exhausted all of your capabilities, all of your resources. And at this point, you need to just involve somebody else. So in terms of types of conditions that we see in the Black community, absolutely PTSD. And that's post-traumatic stress disorder. One thing that I found very interesting was that PTSD is misdiagnosed as schizophrenia. And schizophrenia is a psychotic disorder. That means you're hearing, seeing, or feeling things that may not be there, or you're paranoid, right? You're having delusional or false beliefs. That's what delusional thoughts are. And so I found that to be really interesting because I've been in situations where I've been in a treatment setting and providers are talking about a particular type of client, a Black client that they're working with, and they're talking about their symptoms And my questions go to, well, do they have a history of trauma? Right? If they're fearful of you as a white provider, would they have the same reaction to me? Right? And what I've found is providers don't have these types of questions on their mind. They don't go to, well, maybe if they work with somebody that's familiar to them, just based off their appearance, would that change the effectiveness of treatment, right? And I'm just saying it because I've been in situations where I've asked these questions and I have a doctor in front of me going, I never even thought about that. Of course you're not going to think about that.
But those are the little things that we don't want to explain when into therapy to see a white therapist.
Those are such big things.
Those are just small, yeah. Small things, right? That make such a huge impact on the exchange.
Well, and think about how many times maybe that particular client tried to explain that.
But it's not met with, it just isn't understood on the other end.
Right, yeah.
Which makes you be like, well, I don't want to do this anymore. It's not working. So just know.
It will work.
Yeah.
It will totally work.
It's just all about finding the person that it will work with.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
How prevalent is depression in the Black community?
It's pretty high, to be honest. So of like the most prevalent, there's PTSD, there's depression, and then there's other anxiety-based disorders, which tend to look like social phobia or generalized anxiety disorder. And so in terms of my experience, I've treated way more PTSD in Black Americans than I have any other condition. And a lot of it has to do with like childhood trauma, lack of resources being available, lack of caregivers being involved, financial issues, instability in terms of living situation, abuse, you know.
And I want to just kind of highlight that point because I think a lot of individuals think that PTSD, it's really the most common, or it's only going to be diagnosed for individuals who are in the military and mainly men. And PTSD is not military specific. It's trauma specific.
Yeah.
So anybody who's been exposed to trauma over and over and over again or once, mm-hmm. and it's big enough to make a massive impact on how you live your daily life, they have the possibility to meet the criteria to be diagnosed with PTSD.
Absolutely.
So just understand that difference. It's based off of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And what we experience.
And if you're not in agreement with the condition or diagnosis that your provider has given you, seek out a second opinion.
Advocate for yourself.
Absolutely. You're the one you're paying for the service, right? You're the one that's the customer when you go in there and you see your provider. So you have the right to say, you know what? I'm going to keep on shopping.
Yeah. And, you know, just to compound, what if somebody has been exposed to a lot of trauma during childhood and then they get into the military and exposed to a lot of trauma there? Like, now we're just like compounding and now we're doubling down on it. So just know it's trauma, and trauma can get real sticky, icky.
Yeah.
So it's hard to work through that by yourself. Nearly impossible, in my opinion, but not for everybody.
And you don't have to.
You don't have to. So why do it?
You don't have to. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the upside. What does it look like for somebody to practice good mental health maintenance?
Get honest with yourself. It's time to be honest about where you're at and the fact that we need to find some type of daily routine. So I would say coping skills, figure out what your coping skills are. And these are things that help you address or resolve issues versus avoiding or distracting yourself from an issue, right? So journaling. Plug.
Empowered as fuck journals available.
So that's one way. Another one is going to be movement. Really big into physical wellness, right? Move that body. Your body and your mind are connected. And that's something that we talk largely about in
the Empowered as Fuck journal.
I thought you were going to hit it with like a nice note like you did last time.
Oh, because I was thinking of the next point that I wanted to make. And it was that, you know, maybe use this as a way to think about your mental health. There is such thing as mental health hygiene. So just like there is like your physical hygiene, you need to wash that. You need to wash that ass every day.
Dana.
Okay. You need to shower. You need to clean yourself. You need to take care of your home. You need to have hygiene in all areas of your life, which also includes mental health. So you need to spend time every day taking care of you.
I can't get that out of my head. Wash that ass, wash that mind.
Is that wash that ass and wash that mind. We might name that the title of this podcast.
Hey, we might have to.
You know what I'm saying? But you've got to practice that. It's so mandatory, because there's no way that if you're not practicing this daily and then you go through a really stressful day or a really stressful experience, that all of a sudden you're going to have those coping skills. You got to practice those daily.
Come on now.
And there's no way around it. That's the answer.
Every day.
Because what's that going to do? It's going to increase your resilience.
Yes, it is. Gosh, you're going to be so successful if you can practice every day mental health hygiene.
It's about having the ability to bounce back in those moments of trials and tribulations. Wow, that was good.
That was nice. I appreciate that one.
With that being said, all right, let's plug you guys with a couple of providers in the state of Arizona that are solid.
Yeah. So if you guys aren't following us, make sure you start following Empower El Mundo on Instagram and Facebook, because that's where we are posting Black providers in the Valley. And you're going to notice pretty soon that we're posting other providers in the Valley as well, based off of their expertise. But for today, we're going to highlight the Black mental health professionals. So the first one that we're going to be talking about is Erica Tatum Sheed. She's with Scottsdale Child and Family Therapy. She out here, all right? And then we got Danica Williams. She is with Novus Leaf. She out here. Mm-hmm. The next one that we have is Dr. Tiffany with Renewed Psychological. She out here, all right? I don't know where the she out here came with, but I'm feeling
it's really
that
hitting.
One.
It's really good. And these are all... These three women are Black therapists. They specialize in different areas, as Dorina's mentioned.
Yes.
If you guys go to our Instagram, we have even listed male providers in the state of Arizona. And they're also Black, so it's really a win.
Come on now.
Cool.
Yes. So if you're ever wanting to know more resources, more information, get connected with us, all right? What one person doesn't know, another one will.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not a one size fits all.
It's not.
So that's why we can reach out to other providers, loop them in, get you with the right one.
Mm-hmm. And if you just need some coaching, that's you work us. With us, right?
We got you.
Maybe you're not ready for a counselor yet. Maybe you don't need a counselor. Right. Some people don't.
And typically the individuals who don't need to focus as much on mental illnesses, but more on like life stressors, would do better with a mindset coach.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is what we're here for. So with that being said, thank you guys coming and kicking in for another episode of Empower El Mundo.
Yes.
Like, subscribe, ask us questions, all of that. And
I think it's time to crip walk out. If you're watching the video. Oh, wait. There it is.
Listen.
Oh.
Thank y'all. Hey. You gotta be empowered to live empowered.
Wait, I'm wearing blue.
Thank you guys. Stay empowered.
Thank
as
you.
Fuck.
You gotta. Look at you.
Eh.
Is that Meg?
Yeah.
Ah.